Steven Lipman, and Steven graduated from the Boston University in 2004. He spent 10 years in real estate. First, he started out as a broker for several years, and then he got into the investing world. He endeavors to partner with growth-oriented, like-minded partners and investors to assist them in achieving their goals of passive income and generational wealth. He's one of the managing partners of a residential investment firm in New Jersey, and they've just become the largest private investment companies in the state. They're doing over 50 million in transactions and over 150 deals a year. He has his wife, Grace. They were married in 2007. Their daughters are Cadence and Harper. Cool names, by the way. I love that. Mm-hmm. Steven is an active member on his church. He also sits on the Rutgers Advisory Board on Design Thinking, and he has been published in Forbes magazine several times. So this is a great interview with Steven Lipman. Let's get to it. And we're back with today's guest of today's episode 170, Steven Lipman from New Jersey. How you doing, Steven? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, definitely excited to have you on the show, learn more about you and just learn more about your businesses and just everything that's going on with you. Let's go ahead and get started, though. Can you just give us a little bit of your background, kind of just what you were doing and then eventually kind of what led you into getting into real estate?
Sure. Yeah. So I graduated from Boston University in 2004 and, I worked in New York City for about a year and a half, just doing outside sales, and recognized that I spent a lot of time on a bus commuting in and out of the city. So I decided to stay closer to home and get my real estate license and started working with some family doing some bank-owned properties and working with some investors and finding them deals so that they could do some flips. Recognized that that seemed to be a pretty good way to go, flipping houses. So we started our wholesale business back in 2011. And, you know, so 8 years in the business now. We started Integrity Properties, which is our wholesale fix and flip business. And we did that, kind of stumbled through it for about five and a half years and tried to figure some things out. Had some success, had some failures, and we made it through a lot of learning curves. But we were looking for financial freedom, you know, and we were, so my partner Travis and I decided to go out on our own and try wholesaling and flipping. And the goal was always to go from wholesaling to flipping and then take capital from flipping into long-term passive income, rentals and things like that. So about 2.5 years ago, we joined a mastermind group of flippers and wholesalers because we kept hitting a wall. We were 2016, we only did 16 deals for about $240,000 worth of revenue. So after you pay taxes and your people and each other, right, there wasn't a ton left. So we just weren't really hitting the stride that we needed to hit. And then you started hearing about guys doing 100 plus deals a year and you're like, can that be possible? So we joined a mastermind. We got the blueprint. We started hitting the ground running. You know, this year we're doing 2 to 3 deals a week. So we're on track to do just about 175 deals at goal. You know, as if we lose acquisition people or we gain acquisition people, those numbers shift around a bit, but that is the goal, about 20 deals a month on target. So that business has grown. And now we have Chief Operating Officer Sean, who's at the helm. And now we've moved into creating Integrity Capital Group. And now we're commercial real estate investors. We buy apartment complexes, student housing units, self-storage complexes, things like that. So, you know, we had the vision 8 years ago. It's starting to come to fruition, you know, in the past year or so for the passive income piece. And we're still growing both businesses.
That's awesome, Steven. Well, thanks so much for sharing your story. And I just think it's amazing how you guys, there's a couple of pieces in that story I want to hit home on, but it seems like you guys started in 2011, trying to figure things out. You had some success, had some failures. In 2016, you did 16 deals, which, you know, is pretty cool. It's awesome in some realm, but now literally 3 years later, it sounds like you're killing it, doing 20 deals a month. Plus you're buying your long-term vision, which is the passive income with apartment complexes and stuff like that. You mentioned financial freedom, and that word to me, it just gets thrown out there so many different ways from so many different people. And I feel like that means different things to different people. So when you talked about, you know, your very first vision was this financial freedom piece, what does that mean to you and possibly your partner as well?
Yeah. Well, I think if you calculate what your monthly expenses are for you and your family, you have a number, right? So if you do your budget, you guys know how much you're spending on a monthly basis to survive, right? We have the three levels of survival. You have the gotta, like all this stuff has got to get paid. You have your wanna, this is the stuff I want to go do. Then you have your mana, your, you know, raining down from heaven overflow kind of thing. And for me, it was, can I create passive income in a way that it covers the gotta, right? Like, can I make sure that the things that I need to pay on a monthly basis are taken care of through passive cash flow? For me, that gives me a sense of security at night to where I don't have to worry about the mortgage getting paid this month. I don't have to go out and hustle for the car payment. I don't have, you know, my kids are in Christian private school. That has an expense tied to it. Can I afford that? So the things that we choose as a family are non-negotiables that we have to pay on a monthly basis. We want to make sure that those things are paid. And so the goal for financial freedom for me is to get those things paid in a passive way. So when I wake up in the morning, I don't have to go to work, right? I want to go to work. I enjoy it. It's my duty. It's my responsibility. But at the same time, my bills are going to get paid. And for me, that's what financial freedom is.
Awesome. So it's kind of hitting just on a passive level for you. You talk about those three levels, which is pretty awesome. Haven't heard actually that before. The gotta, the wanna, and then the mana.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's definitely awesome. But your vision was at least, maybe you don't have to do the wannas passively, but you at least want to get the gotta get paid and your bills. Is that correct? Or has your vision shifted to a different level here as you're now achieving a lot of that? Has it shifted to getting the passive income to cover everything you want to do too? Or what's it look like now?
I think you have short-term and long-term goals. So although that was my initial goal, right? It's how do you get that stuff taken care of and create that freedom in your life to where you don't have the stress of, I got to go pay the bills. And then, you know, but side by side, you know, my family, we've talked about what our long-term goals are and what's that look like for income goals. What's it look like for financial freedom goals? And for me, you know, it's almost scary to say it every time that I do it. It kind of puts me on notice that we're working towards something. But, you know, my goal is we tithe, right? We go to church and we tithe 10% of our income as the Bible calls us to do. And then we have giving over and above that into offerings and missions and, you know, just the things that pull on your heart to give to, you know. And I met a guy a long time ago who he gave 90% of his income back out. Mm. And so that's our overreaching goal, is to be able to give 90% of what we have coming in. And that doesn't mean we want to live like paupers, but it does mean that we're going to have to create some significant income to be able to do that.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's an awesome goal. It's just a cool story and stuff. So you can feel free to check back in with us if you get close to that. It'd be awesome. I'd love to hear about that.
Well, you know, God has shown me that you have to kind of eke that up. Mm-hmm. You don't get to just do it when it's comfortable. You don't say, oh, hey, you know, I made $3 million this year. Let's go ahead and give 2.7 out. It's every year as we continue to grow, you know, we're pressing into giving till it hurts a little bit. Like, let's up that number, you know, so it kind of grows together. So yeah, I'll check in and let you guys know when we get there.
Sounds good. Well, in a little bit, I want to dive into your wholesaling business and your fix and flip business a little bit more and stuff, but just kind of talking about that, just the passivity of what you want to be able to do and to be able to generate that and take care of the gotta, the wanna, and the giving and all that. Just talk to us about just the Integrity Capital Group and just what you guys are doing and kind of where you're standing. I know you're buying up some stuff right now to take care of that passive side, but kind of talk to us about what kind of projects you're into.
Yeah. So we started Integrity Capital and we started putting LOIs out and, you know, trying to go get deals under contract and things like that. But it was hard because we didn't have any assets under management. So the difference between the residential and commercial space is they really want to make sure that you can close. So brokers aren't bringing us a lot of deals. Nobody cares that you're going to flip 200 houses this year. They want to know how many assets under management you have. And do you have the personal financial statements to close? And do you have, you know, the team in place and what have you operated before? And there's a lot of underwriting into you that they do before they start giving you deal flow. So it was hard to break into that space. A mentor of ours said, hey, you know, guys, you're from single family. So was I. The money's not really in the deal. The money's in the money. And if you can bring some money to a sponsor's deal, then you'll be able to cut the line a little bit. So our first deal, it really was just amazing timing. The sponsor that we're working with, who, you know, did the first deal with us. So we never owned a rental. We never owned a passive income property. We never owned a commercial property. And our first deal is a $14 million ground up construction of 1,200 self-storage units in Orlando, Florida.
Wow.
Might as well start big.
Yeah. You know, I've always been told that I'm a whale hunter. And I guess we keep proving that point because everybody's like, oh, you should go get a single family rental first before you dive into something big. And it just didn't make sense to me. I mean, the market's proven itself over and over again that commercial real estate is generally safe and stable asset class. So why start small when if we could jump into something big, we could. So we started vetting sponsors and started vetting deals. And, you know, now we knew how to underwrite because we put a lot of offers out. And the sponsor that we're working with has almost 2,000 doors under management, $100 million of assets under management. So he's getting good deals, right? He's seeing the deals before we are. And we said, hey, let us bring some money into your deal and we'll share in the deal and we'll become partners with you. And we did. So we raised and deployed about $4 million into that deal. And we have a couple partners that helped us raise some of that capital. And it's been a cool experience. We started pouring concrete last week. So we should be vertical in just a couple of weeks and renting them out in just a couple of months.
Wow.
So that was the first deal that we did. And then we got into a student housing complex out in Iowa and then a covered RV and boat storage down in Florida. We're under contract on another self-storage facility and another student housing complex outside of Nashville. So the trajectory was very quick. You know, November was our first. So about 7 months ago, we closed on our first deal. We have about $35 million in assets under management now. And by the end of August, we should be at nearly $60 million under management.
Wow. You know, I talked to a lot of people on this show and we always talk about kind of doing one thing that you're really, really good at. It sounds like you're doing a lot of things, especially, you know, you're not just doing multifamily apartments. We've talked to guys that are doing big apartment buildings. We've talked to other guys that are strictly doing self-storage, other guys that are just doing wholesaling. But right now it sounds like you're doing some flips, you're doing wholesaling, you're doing some self-storage, plus you're doing apartments as well. So talk to us about that a little bit.
Let me make it sound like I'm not Superman. Our wholesale business has a chief operating officer that runs the day-to-day operations, and he's fantastic. That business would crash into a mountain if he didn't have his finger on the pulse. So we have a team of 8 people on that in that company, and that company doesn't take a ton of my time. So that's 2 separate businesses. I'm the visionary for both, meaning, you know, if you guys have read Traction, right, visionary integrator. So we have an integrator. Travis and I are both kind of visionaries. He is one of the unicorns in life that has both a visionary and integrator profile. And I'm just the visionary guy. So I come up with the big ideas and I can go on these podcasts and tell you guys about them. But in terms of the day-to-day and follow through and getting it done, you know, all of that goes to my team. You know, those are the guys that are making it happen. So the wholesale business, the fix and flip business, that is not taking a ton of my time. And then for the commercial side, what you're talking about is asset classes, and people do get very focused in an asset class. So we're not doing a lot of things. We're doing one thing, and that's raising capital. Mm. Now we've partnered with other sponsors that do other things, and they are experts in their field. And we've partnered with those experts because they are really good at the self-storage or at the student housing or at the multifamily. And we raise capital into those deals. So it gives us and our investors another layer of safety and security because not only are we just going into those particular asset classes, but we're also underwriting the sponsor, the operator, the people that are getting the deals and doing it and have been doing it for a long time. So it gives us another layer of security to deploy that capital into.
Yeah. I mean, the more and more I've got into our business, and we do a couple of different things. We're mostly a wholesale / hotel company closing the properties. And, but the more I've gotten into this business, the more I've realized as the more resources and the more capital you have, the more opportunities you have, which separates you from a lot of the other companies out there that don't have those resources, right? So I really want to dive into that because I think that's such an important topic that you said the money's not in the deal, the money is in the money. And so we've had some guys on the show before talk about raising capital and how they do it. And, you know, there's different strategies, there's different ways you can do some of the similar ways that you do with a wholesale business, you know, mailings and starting with your warm people. But, you know, to find people that, number one, are interested in passive streams of income for them, but then also trust you with their money that you know you are going to treat it well. So take us through the process. You talk about raising capital. That's like your big thing, it sounds like, and that's what separates you and you're able to do all these opportunities. So let's talk about how do you raise capital? Where do you start? Who do you talk to? What do you do? Do you send out a mailing or take us through that process of what you guys are doing?
So we were already raising capital for our fix and flip business. So people were giving us money for fix and flips and we were paying them a fixed return, 10 or 12%. And the problem was we couldn't keep their capital deployed for the entire year, right? We were giving them 10 or 12%, but it wasn't really shaking out to be that because they'd give us money, we'd close on a deal, we'd rehab it, we'd resell it. It would take us 4 months. We'd give the money back. Then we'd have to go find another deal. And then they'd give us their money back in a month. You know, so it really only shook out to be maybe 10 months out of 12. So they weren't making the return that they wanted to with us. They were making good returns, but they wanted to keep their money deployed longer.
So if they were making a 10% return or whatever, 8 to 10 or something like that, I think people don't really think about that as they think that they're making that. But if it's only deployed 10 out of 12 months, it's not that return, right? It's only...
if it was 10%, it's 8.33%.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So you're not making 10, you're making 8.3, which is still a great return if you're comparing it to the market, but that's not typically why they jumped into deals with us. They wanted to make 10. So we said, look, as we started to make the transition into commercial, we said, we can take you guys into this space. We're going to be flipping less because we're going to be focusing more on the just being a wholesale business and commercial. So we're flipping less and we've moved a lot of that money from our flips into these longer term deals, typically a 3 to 5 year hold. And historically on these deals that we've closed on already, the returns are about 12% per year for them. So, you know, they're making much more consistent returns. And, you know, if I'm being honest and not to hurt anybody's chances of raising capital into their fix and flip business, it's just a very different model, right? If you're deploying your 12% money or 10% money with me into a fix and flip, you're deploying money into a relatively risky asset, right? I mean, the house is vacant. It's not cash flowing. We're assuming we've all bought it well enough to not get hurt on the exit, but there is some inherent risk in deploying capital into a vacant property. These other deals that we're deploying capital into it's much more stable and consistent. There's existing cash flow. The new construction builds, not so much, but there's plenty of underwriting to support the fact that when it does cash flow, it will weigh more than support the necessary equity check. So it was a pretty easy sell because there was already existing cash flows into these assets, you know, and they're securitized by shares of a company that owns the asset. So it was much more consistent and much more long-term. So people don't really have to think about it. They set it and forget it, and they get quarterly checks every quarter. And, you know, they can log into their account on integritycapitalgroup.com and look at the money that they have deployed, look at the monthly management reporting. And, you know, we have a pretty high tech system where they can go in and log into their account and see what their projects are doing and what their money is doing. So it was a pretty clear transition for those people that we already had their money working. Now we've deployed $7 million, right? So in just the last couple of months, and we have another nearly $20 million to deploy in the next 3 or 4 months. So where do you find that one?
Right.
If you find the answer, you can let me know. So we don't do typical mailings. I mean, so not to get too technical, but the SEC doesn't allow you to just go advertise that you're raising capital, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to be careful on how you do that, depending on who you raise money from. So you have to look into those rules and regulations to make sure that you're abiding by them. So one is, yeah, your warm network. You have to make sure that you have an existing relationship with people that are investing with you. The SEC has guidelines as to what that requires, right? How many conversations, how many emails, how many touches, et cetera. It's not a lot. So, we do have back and forth conversations with people that can now invest with us after a period of time. But really, the way that we have really shifted into fifth gear is by partnering with people. And we've partnered with a lot of people from the single family space that are looking to get into the multifamily space that have done the same thing that we have done. They've been able to raise capital into their fix and flips, and they can move some of their capital from that into multifamily to help them build their portfolio as well. We have the deal flow. We're actually turning down deals now because we need more bandwidth to be able to deploy that capital. So the long-term goal is to make sure that we're the thought leaders and telling people about what it is that we're doing and taking direct investments. But another part of our, goal is to be able to help people jump into this space that wouldn't otherwise be able to, like we were. I mean, we weren't able to jump into the space on our own until we found a guy with deal flow and real deals, not like, let me make this deal work, but an actual deal that we would want to put our own money into so that we would be able to effectively raise capital into that deal. So a lot of the people that are looking to make that jump into passive income, they think that they have to go find a deal, or they think that they have to go underwrite 1,000 deals before they can get involved. And just like our mentor told us, we'll tell you, the money's not in the deal, the money's in the money. The capital has the loudest voice. So when you come and say, hey, I have $1 million of private money that I'd like to deploy into this deal, we can carve out equity for that co-syndicator, for our partner, and the investor makes their effective returns, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how we'll go from zero to 60 million. I'm hoping that we can get to 75 million in year one, but zero to $75 million in assets under management in 12 months, I don't know of anybody else that's been able to do that. The only reason we'd be able to do that is by sharing the wealth, right? Sharing with the guys that want to help build their portfolio and their credibility and really get paid to learn.
Yeah, I think you hit on a couple of great points there. Number one, you kind of shifted the conversation of, talking to maybe someone wanting to lend you money, which sometimes has a bad taste in people's mouths, borrowing money from somebody, and you switch it to partnering, which is awesome. And people want to partner with someone who's already successful. They want to, come along for the ride. And I think that's awesome. And I think you also said just educating people. I think that's the huge thing. Everybody out there invests in something. We all have some sort of retirement accounts or savings accounts or whatever, and we're all putting it into something, right? And just educating people on an alternative solution that they can put their money into, because most of them just don't know what to do. The only thing they know is the common stock market, mutual funds, things like that. And if you educate them on, hey, there could be a better solution for you to make a higher return that is also less risky, would you be up for that? And everybody would say, absolutely, of course. And now educate me on that in a simple way. And I think if you can educate people, I think that's probably the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. So, right?
You're right. And, I think the statistics are staggering, where it's upwards of 80% of investors or higher are invested in the markets. So my dad passed away about 5 years ago, and he lost about 40% of his wealth in the stock market before he passed. And he didn't live long enough to see that rebound. Mm-hmm. So that gave me a pretty good pause of, man, there was really no control there, right? And he was in relatively safe stocks and bonds and mutual funds. Mm-hmm. And the market fell out, right? Everybody got hurt. A lot of people have rebounded since then. But if you have worked your whole life and you can see that happen, I always say that Wall Street puts your money in mutual funds and puts their money in commercial real estate. And if you see where the majority of banks' money is, it's in commercial real estate, because it does offer the most consistent, stable, securitized returns. So I don't dog anybody for being in the stock market. It's not for me. I know real estate inside and out. So educating people on the fact that they can invest into these properties is a really big, what I'm learning is it's a lot of people that don't know that they can do that. And here's the problem. You can't do that unless you know somebody doing it. So if you call up your Fidelity agent, he's going to say, yeah, I can get you in commercial real estate. Here's this real estate investment trust or REIT that you can invest in. Historically, these REITs have performed well, right? 6 to 8%, great. But if you can make more than that by being a direct investor into one complex, you need to know somebody. Mm-hmm. And that really is the hurdle, because not a lot of people know people that are buying these complexes. So a lot of the people that invest with us, they're only able to do so because they know us. And so if investors are looking for places to put their money, they can find operators like us and like our partners, but it's not as cut and dry as calling your agent, your financial broker, and say, hey, I need to get into something like this. What do you have for me? Because it's not really out there for everybody to just pull the trigger on. They need to know the people that are operating these deals.
That's awesome. Great advice.
No, that's really good. And I just know we're kind of running short on this part of the show and stuff like that. So I just want to get into just a real quick little thing of just going back to your wholesaling stuff. You said back in 2016, you guys were doing like, you know, 16 deals, and then basically 3 years later, you're up to possibly doing like 175, and you guys joined the mastermind group. What was that main thing that kind of happened in that mastermind group, or just being able to kind of get that, talk to other people? What was that kind of secret sauce to help you guys get over that hump?
It really was just finding the blueprint. Mm-hmm. It was understanding that we couldn't do everything with just two guys. We needed to hire, we needed to scale, we needed to market consistently, and we needed systems and processes to manage all of it. You know, we were just shotgun every day, right? Just, oh, here's a deal in the MLS. Let's go make an offer. Oh, now we got it. Let's go sell it. We were acquisitions, we were dispositions, we were transactions. We did everything. We answered the phone. We were lead management. So then you sit around guys that are doing 150 deals a year, and they say, no, this is what you do. And we just believe people, right? If you've been doing it well, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. So tell me what you're doing and I will go implement that tomorrow. So we're not the smartest guys in the room, but we will implement something if we think that it's going to work. And that's been all of our businesses. So the next year, you know, we went from $240,000 to $1 million in 12 months. And that was just, you know, massive implementation and hiring and scaling. And we stubbed our toe quite a bit, but it did start to work. And then we needed to figure out where to plug the holes.
Yeah. If you don't mind sharing, like what was like one of those kind of big mistakes that you maybe stubbed your toe on that you wouldn't mind sharing with the audience?
I mean, I think holding on to people for too long, you know, we like to give people the benefit of the doubt and we want to see people succeed. And sometimes it's to our own detriment. You know, we're not really sure when to let an employee go if they're not working. We've had some great people that have worked with us in the past. And then we've had some people that have come in and have gone on, you know, 100 appointments without closing any deals. And, you know, we didn't have the systems and processes and accountability management in place to recognize that on a week by week basis and saying, oh man, we shouldn't let this go on any further. So, you know, from an ownership perspective, you need to have your finger on the pulse of all of the numbers and you need to be able to hold people accountable to what you want them to do. And if they're not, being able to correct it or let them go. So really it was the difference of being an entrepreneur to a business owner. We didn't do a good job in transitioning in terms of what we needed to learn to operate a business efficiently and not just go out and grind and be the entrepreneur. So that transition was really tough for especially me, because I just thought everybody was going to do it the way that I did it. And, you know, you need to give people guardrails and metrics and accountability to make sure that they're going the direction that you want them to go.
Yeah, definitely. And then I just, you know, kind of just one little follow-up question then with that too is, so you know, kind of turned around your wholesale business and like that. Did your mind have to shift from you to go from that wholesaling fix and flip business over into the commercial side? Was that a big change for you?
It wasn't for me. We always wanted to get into that. And I do hear people talk a lot about the mindset shifts that go on, you know, year over year for them and growing. I think dollar amount was probably the biggest hurdle that we had. Like, I'm going to buy a $20 million building. But it didn't scare us, right? Like, so as whale hunters, I don't really care about the size of the deal. If the deal works and the metric works, then we want to go do the deal. And since that was always the goal, it wasn't jarring. It was a little jarring as to how it happened, right? How fast it happened to get into one deal and all of a sudden have a $14 million building was a little bit shocking in hindsight. But it didn't take that much of a mindset shift for me to say, now we can go do bigger deals. I was always frustrated with the fact that we couldn't grow past ourselves. You know, so, you know, I know people that have $240,000 a year businesses and they're very happy with that. We were super frustrated with that. Then when we hit $1 million, I didn't know why we weren't at three. And now that we're at three, I don't know why we're at 10. And, you know, so we've always been really aiming very high. And it's not to say that we don't celebrate the small victories, but, you know, we want it to be better all the time. So it wasn't that hard of a pill for me to swallow to say, hey, we want to get into $100 million in deals in the next 18 months.
Well, that's awesome. Well, you guys have certainly done amazing things in the past few years. And I think that it just goes to show you, if you're listening out there, that there's not much separation between the person doing a deal a month or a couple of deals a month to doing 150 deals a month. Would you say, Stephen, you know, it's just that mind shift and it's just learning how to run a business rather than grinding and being the entrepreneur, right?
Yep. I mean, it's people and processes. And if you find the right people and you implement the right processes, then you really can scale. You know, I read a great book, Jack Welch's book, when he was running GE. And, you know, I was so amazed by his ability to run GE when it had GE Finance, GE Appliances, GE Aeronautical Engineering. This guy didn't know all of that stuff, right? So he couldn't possibly be an expert in all of those things, but he knew how to run a business. Mm-hmm. And it really opened my eyes to the opportunity to say, you know, you don't need to know everything. You need to partner with people that do. And it really just released me from the fact that I wasn't good enough at all of these other different things. I was only good at this one thing, and that was okay. So reading his book, I was like, man, you know, this guy can't possibly be an aeronautical engineer and know about stoves and also know about how to invest into other people's companies at the same time. So it just opens your eyes to recognize that being a business owner is more than just the grind. So if you're doing one deal a month, it's not that big of a jump to get to 15, right? But you do need systems and processes. I think the biggest mindset shift is, for me, hiring our first employee was scary, right? I think a lot of people feel like, hey, I'm responsible for this person's well-being and livelihood now. And they're probably afraid to take that step, you know? And I would argue that that's not your responsibility. That's their responsibility and God's responsibility. And you as a business owner have no impact as to whether or not that person will survive or not survive. And you can give them an opportunity to grow with inside your organization. And if they take that opportunity, great. If they don't, they won't be with you very long. And that probably held us back from hiring our first person longer than I would have liked. But it was really that recognition that, like, I don't control their destiny. It's really not on me. So that kind of released us to being able to say, okay, now we can go higher and go grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. That's definitely been something that I've just taken that responsibility of your team and just trying to push them and push them and push them, wanting them to be so successful. And sometimes you want it bad or worse than what they wanted. And that's not a good feeling to have as an owner. But what was the name of that book by Jack Welch?
I think it's just You Don't Know Jack.
Okay. Sounds good. You Don't Know Jack. We're going to put that in our show notes, guys, at simplewholesaling.com/episode170. And awesome stuff with Stephen Libman here. And we're going to get into the part of the show that we like to call Going Deep. So in this part, Stephen, we're just going to kind of break it down. You know, you've mentioned God a couple of times. You mentioned your faith. So how do you intertwine that with your business, being a business owner, with all aspects of it?
Yeah, I think that all of us have different callings and gifts in our lives. And I think that ours has been marketplace ministry. So I think that being able to get into the marketplace to create wealth so that we can help fund the kingdom is really our calling. I'm not going to be on the mission field. I mean, I might go do one, but I'm not the missionary that's going to live in the Philippines for 9 months out of the year. But I would love to be able to fund that, right? We'd love to be able to plant churches and pay for that. And I think that, you know, the Bible teaches us that it is God who gives us the power to get wealth so that we can proclaim his name around the earth. And we take that pretty seriously. So, you know, the name of both of our companies are Integrity Capital Group and Integrity Properties. You know, it's based on the scripture of Proverbs where it says that, you know, the man with integrity will walk securely and the man who does not walk with integrity will be found out. And that's really just a reminder to us as to who we work for. And, you know, this is all God's in our eyes. So we have a responsibility, I think, to help steward the funds of the kingdom into kingdom expansion. And that's been a big driver for us. So we actually are writing nonprofits and 501c3s that we support into these commercial deals so that they get quarterly checks moving forward as well. Not just our investors, and it gets carved out of our end, so it doesn't affect our investors' returns, but we're able to build them directly into these deals so that we can support them for the entirety of the deal. So 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, whatever that is, they get basically a piece of ownership as a nonprofit, and they get continual checks. So that's been one way that we've been able to kind of give back. And, you know, our why is just kind of what we're called to do, which is go spread the gospel around the earth. You know, my wife and family supports us in that. And, you know, we're big believers that if the pyramid is kept correct, then we'll continue to be blessed. And that pyramid is God first, family second, business third. My wife's okay being second because she knows that she'll never be third. I stole that from my father-in-law. He's been saying that for 55 years of marriage, so I think he's got it right.
He made sure you were aware of that before you married his daughter, right?
He did. So that's our motivation. I mean, you know, we told you about our tithe goals and stuff, but really it's when the gates of heaven open up, we want to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. And that's because we've answered the Great Commission.
No, that's great. Awesome stuff. And thank you so much for sharing your faith and everything that you guys are doing. It sounds awesome. I think that God, obviously, you know, there's many parables and stories. He gives people different gifts. And just because, you know, your gift and have the heart isn't going to the Philippines and being a missionary doesn't mean that you can't use your gifts. And one of your gifts is building wealth, doing business in the right way and using it for His glory. And I think that's awesome. So great job. Mm-hmm.
It's time for a touch of randomness.
So we just got a couple just random questions for you here, Stephen. So if you just kind of answer the first thing that pops into your mind, we'd appreciate that. So let's say that if you had the attention of the entire world for 30 seconds, what would you say?
So probably three things. One, have fun. Everybody seems to be freaking out about a lot of stuff that doesn't really matter. So go have a good time. Love each other. It's as simple and as difficult as that. Two, ask questions about whether or not God exists and who He is and whether or not Jesus Christ was who He said He was when He died on the cross. He said that He was the way, the truth, and the light. And if that's true, it has eternal consequences. If it's not true, it's of zero consequence. So go find out if that's true. And then thirdly, go home and be with your kids. Stop grinding away at work. Nobody's going to die and say, "Hey man, I wish I really spent more time at work." Go home and spend time with your family.
I like that.
Love it.
I like that. That's good. One guy told me the other day, I was having a serious conversation with him and we were talking about kids and family. And he says, you know, your kids, he was older than I was. I think he was in his 50s. He said, your kids will never care about how much money you make. And so that's true.
That's right. That's good.
They just want you. Good. He said, they just want you. So awesome stuff. Number two, what chore do you absolutely hate doing?
Mowing the grass.
Oh, I do too.
Mowing the lawn.
Some people love it.
I know. Some people think it's cathartic. They love to go out there and man, I just don't like it. But we have a lawn guy now and I don't have to do it. So that's a blessing.
I have a lawn guy too. I don't mind like the riding part. I don't like the tedious detail of the trimming and all that stuff.
Oh, I'm one of those people that like my lines have to be absolutely perfect. If not, I'll do it again. And yeah,
I'm that guy. Yeah. That's not me.
It's so funny. My neighbors, I think they're the line people. So they just got done mowing their grass yesterday. And we have this electric tractor that my 5-year-old drives and he was driving it down the sidewalk and he started driving it in their yard. So all of a sudden you can see his lines just straight through the yard, messed them all up. Awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much for being on the show today, Stephen. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I want to give you one last opportunity to tell all of our listening audience out there, where's the best place to find out about you and your company?
Yeah, if you just go to integritycapitalgroup.com, you can see our projects and reach out to us. My email is Stephen with a V. At integritycapitalgroup.com. We'd love to talk to you guys about how to get involved in the space or invest directly into these deals.
All right. Well, you guys go check out integritycapitalgroup.com. And this is a wrap with Stephen Littman. You can find all of our show